Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Jonathan Northcroft of the Sunday Times. This is it, a season compressed into 6 days. On Wednesday, Liverpool must come from behind to reach Wembley at Southampton's expense. On Saturday, it's Wolves in the FA Cup. Then the following Tuesday, Chelsea are at Anfield. Title hopes on the line. They spreading themselves too thin, Tony.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the problems earlier on the season, when they were doing so well, there was a storm gathering, and the storm was due to the squad's not good enough. And the squad's never been good enough. They needed players in the summer, couldn't get them because they weren't in the Champions League, or players of the required standard. And, of course, everyone's doing too well. And at Anfield, no one's thinking ahead. It's like, oh, this is brilliant, this. In January, we might struggle. Last December and January, they struggled this, these 2 months as well. So, yeah, they need players. They're really short-handed in midfield. They need a dynamic up-and-down midfielder. And we all know about the problems across the defence and the goalkeeper. So, yeah, it's going to be a difficult week.
You've had very recently done a big interview with Jurgen Klopp. How did you find him? You know, he's sort of grown into the job over a year. He's understanding what English football was about. You know, it's encapsulated in this week, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think he'll actually enjoy it. I mean, the thing that struck me most was just his enthusiasm. He is what you see. I mean, he was like that kind of German backpacker you meet when you're travelling where everything's, you know, wunderbar. But you came away feeling very, very positive. Tony's right about the squad, but I think Klopp's trying to do things a different way. I think Liverpool have probably had too much spending over the years. They've had too many summers where they've tried to buy 7 or 8 players, not of the required standard. And because Liverpool don't pay the huge sort of wages or transfers, they've always been punting a little bit in the transfer market. He's trying to do something a bit different. He's trying to develop players. And I think they're just ahead of schedule this year.
So he's a victim of his own success. Yeah. The problem is always recruitment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go back to since Fenway Sports, we've come in, took it over. They've had the wrong people in the recruitment positions, and they've still got the wrong people in the recruitment positions.
What about the youth side? You know, there's a lot of emphasis now. You know, Stevie Gerrard's going in to do his apprenticeship in the academy. Steve Highway is this sort of great godfather figure there. Have they got enough of those kids who can come through? Because that's always it. People talk about, yes, there's one in the pipeline or three in the pipeline. They never come through.
Yeah, and I actually think Klopp's reign may stand or fall by that question. Mm. It's too early to say. If you look at what happened to him at Dortmund, it took 4 years, I think, before things really reached a critical mass. But that Dortmund team had 3 academy players, had 7 players he'd signed under the age of 21. There are 2 or 3 really good prospects there. But what they're probably going to need is 4 or 5, 5 or 6. And they will still need some signings along the way. So far, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, to me, looks like an absolute bona fide Premier League player. The rest of them, probably a little bit too early. There's a kid called Rian Brewster who has a bit of a gathering sort of excitement about.
Yeah, the England under-17 player scoring lots of goals. Mm.
So a couple of years away, though, given his age. Mm. I think Klopp's job is to keep things going and wait to see if this generation can do it.
Yeah, what about Chelsea? You know, because Chelsea drew at Anfield, and Barry McWilliams has already been on saying, do you think Chelsea need to buy in this window?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they needed to buy last summer. They need to buy players who suit the way Antonio Conte wants to set up and play. And what's been so remarkable about what's happened at Stamford Bridge is that in September, when they got beat by Liverpool and blown away in the first half by Arsenal, he was so depressed. He was talking about finishing 10th, you know, like they did last year. Never seen a manager you know, sort of evoke the previous season under a different regime so much as him. And then he had a little sulk and then thought, what am I going to do with this squad? And he's got, it's got working beautifully. Now, I look at them and I think someone's got to be able to get those wing-backs. Someone's got to be able to exploit those three centre-halves. And no one's done it particularly well yet. Tottenham did to a certain extent.
Liverpool set up to do that?
Liverpool, actually, at the best, when the front four have got the movement and the guile that they can show, yes, they are very well set up to do that. Whether they'll do that, whether they've got the mental strength, is a big question.
Yeah, Paul Hamilton asks, if Liverpool had an out-and-out striker, you know, and I suppose we've got to throw Sturridge into this conversation, would they be better placed for a title bid?
The problem with Klopp is that he wants his striker to do so much more than be an out-and-out striker. So it's almost a strange question. If they had Robert Lewandowski, yeah, of course, yeah. But he needs somebody of that class who can do the pressing game but can also score the goals. And there really aren't many people out there. I think it's Mane that's the big miss at the moment.
Without a doubt.
Tony's spot on about Chelsea and their potential weaknesses. If Liverpool have Mane getting down the sides, then I'd fancy them a lot more.
Well, and the problem with Sturridge is he's an out-striker.
Yeah.
You know, it's he's always out. And it's, and Klopp's not having that, you know. It's one of those things where, unless he feels physically and mentally perfect, he doesn't want to play. And, you know, players like that don't appeal to managers like Klopp.
Yeah. Southampton have got a similar week to Liverpool. You know, they've got the League Cup semi-final on Wednesday, then they're playing Arsenal in the Cup on Saturday. Are they equipped to beat Liverpool? Or to retain their lead, at least.
Yeah, well, certainly, I think almost anyone, as Swansea showed, are equipped to beat Liverpool at the moment, unless they can they can recapture some of the spark and perhaps be a little bit more organised. I mean, frankly, the centre midfield was atrocious against Swansea. Fair was allowed to do as he likes, and when that's happening, you throw it forward to Southampton, you think, it could be ugly.
Mm. Talking about ugly, you were at Arsenal yesterday.
Yes.
Arsene Wenger, what's your read on what should happen to him?
Well, frankly, he should get a long ban. He went absolutely ballistic on the sidelines when the fourth official put 7 minutes up. And they were just 7 justified minutes. There'd been a long break. And then, of course, the incident in the tunnel where he pushed the fourth official twice. And as Wenger said, he used the sort of language that you hear every day in football. Yeah, you do it every day in football, but you shouldn't be saying it to the referee and the fourth official. I think we're at the point where it's almost impossible to referee now. The game's too fast, and the answer is not technology, because that can only do cut-and-dry decisions. I think the only thing we can do is protect the referees and hope they get it right. And I think they should start here with a 10-game ban for Wenger. Put him in the stands for 10 games and you know, maybe even a stadium ban.
Right, we've had Granit Xhaka sent off again nine times in under 3 years. Michael Cox asks, is he now as much as a nuisance as an asset?
Yeah, I don't think at the moment Arsene Wenger can trust him. You know, and he's old enough. He's not 20, he's 23, 24. He looks to me like he lacks a little bit of pace, tries to make up for it by being overcommitted. He's an international captain. I think he's been a huge disappointment to Arsenal this season. He should be the dominant presence in that midfield. He's not on the pitch enough, and he can't be trusted in the tackles.
When he come in the summer, everyone was saying, you know, this is a fellow who's going to get 4 red cards and pick up 10 yellows. You know, he's always leaving his foot in.
Fernandes Michael is saying, you know, Chelsea are doing what they did a couple of years ago. They're creating the chances, but they're taking them. How important in that context, then, is Costa for them?
Oh, Costa's massive. I mean, he's been, you know, the player of the season so far. You know, he's won them games which they shouldn't have won. He scored goals at times when they're desperate for them. And I think they've coped quite well with all the kerfuffle that surrounded this this mythical, you know, sort of transfer to China. Wouldn't surprise me if it's a, you know, Chelsea had an offer prepared for him before Christmas. To, you know, to lift his wages from about 150 a week to 200. He's looked at that and thought, Pogba, the going rate's about 300 a week. Mm. So it wouldn't surprise me if this is the clumsiest sort of negotiation you've ever seen in your life.
And is that something that we're going to have to get used to? Because football now, whether we like it or not, is essentially controlled by about five agents.
Yes, it is. And the players that are going to China in particular are examples of that. Mm. And when fans sort of question the player's ambition, I think they actually maybe aren't understanding the situation that player might have with the agent, and you've got third-party ownership. You've got all these different issues surrounding the game. And it will affect the Premier League, because the Premier League's been built on offering the highest wages and the biggest transfer fees. And another league's come along that has more money, or at least a more foolish use of money, even in the Premier League. So it will affect things. But with Costa, the only thing I'd say is that brilliant. He is absolutely brilliant. But what Chelsea have got, as well as him, is Hazard and Pedro, who score goals. And I don't think any other team has got the backup to this top striker that they do.
Yeah, we're striking a chord with quite a few Liverpool fans at the moment. Christopher Chan is saying, can you shed any light on what on earth is going on between Jurgen Klopp and Sacco?
The Sacco myth, I don't get it. You know, he was brought in. Sacco, Emre Can and Markovits were going to be the three players who changed things in the Premier League and turned Liverpool into contenders, to win the title. And frankly, none of them are good enough. And, Brendan Rodgers didn't fancy Sacco. Klopp doesn't fancy Sacco. And his personality is such that he's, he causes trouble. He's a pest around the training grounds, and he distracts people.
And that's the thing for Klopp, because for him it's uber serious when it comes to training, working hard. He is one of those managers that you buy into the group, you buy into the values, or not at all. It doesn't matter who you are. And we've mentioned Daniel Sturridge. Daniel Sturridge isn't a problem in the way Sacco might be at training, but maybe he's more individual in the way he wants to do things. And there's just no room for that kind of person under
Klopp. He'll be part of the group mentality, and Sacco never has been. And also, he's a liability on the pitch.
Yeah, well, you see, he looked to always me to be a candidate for one of those China moves. Yeah, you know, nice, easy little sinecure. Now, we're also asked about Sanchez at Arsenal. Mm. China, really?
I can't, not with his competitive spirit. I can't see it. I mean, he's certainly at that age where he's got this one big contract left for himself. He comes from poor background, all that sort of stuff. So money will be very important to him, and probably rightly so, given his abilities. But he is a top player who wants to win things. I think the more likely destination would be a Champions League contending, like a team that's really, really got a chance of winning it, a Bayern Munich, or going back to Spain, possibly.
Because the stats are ridiculous, aren't they? Yeah. He's been involved in 32 goals in the last 33 Premier League games, 20 goals in that, scoring them. If Arsenal are going to be taken seriously, they've got to keep players like that, haven't they?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, he's important to them. He is a problem to a certain extent, though, because he shoots too often. Mm-hmm. And he shoots from positions where he's never going to score. He shoots from way outside the box, and he shoots through Forrester players. He's not the cleverest player. When they tried to get Suarez, and they couldn't get him a year later, they got Sanchez. Mm-hmm. You'd see why Barcelona traded up and Arsenal got the worst of it. So he's good. He's very good, and Arsenal do need to keep him. But, Wenger needs to have a word with him. Create some space and pass the ball. Don't shoot.
Max Bentley asks, he makes the point that Arsenal haven't won at St Mary's in their last five visits. Mm-hmm. So he sees that as a potential upset, in inverted commas. Where are the other upsets in this fourth round, do you think?
Well, I mean, you look at that Sutton United, Leeds United, and the romance just makes you think, possibly. I mean, Derby against Leicester, would it be an upset if Derby won, form that Leicester are in? I don't know. I mean, the disappointing thing, I suppose, is there are quite a few of the big teams who have home draws, like Liverpool, Wolves and United, Wigan. If you flip those ties round, they might be potential.
Well, if Liverpool play the kids, there's still a chance there for Wolves. So, I mean, it's difficult to see too many upsets, though.
Mm. Mm. We talked about Leeds, the whole damned United era. Mm. You're a venerable observer of the game, Tony, let's put it like that. What's your take on, what's your read on Don Revy? And, because this tie will, it will go back to Sutton 1970, the Dirty Leeds era. Mm. What were they like?
They were a brilliant side. They were fantastic sides. They were really well balanced. They attacked really well. They were brutal.
brutal when you attack them, and plays with great flair, and and were mean too. Remember the 6-0 over Southampton, the 6-0 at Sutton, all romance of the cup was gone there. They had a fatal flaw, and it wasn't dirty. It wasn't the dirt. It was they couldn't get over the line. Mm. In the course of 11 years, they hit the bar and doing the double when the double meant something, like 9 times. You know, they should be probably the team who they should have dominated the mid-60s and the mid-70s. You know, they should have won 4 or 5 titles. They should have won in Europe, and they should have got 2 doubles, and yet they failed. There was something about them that they just couldn't get over the line, and I think that, rather than the dirty Leeds thing, is the main thing that people miss about them.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a basket case club over the last decade, really, if we're honest. But that one manager has got it right, Gary Monk. I watched him work at Swansea, and he really, really impressed me. And I couldn't believe that they got rid of him.
No.
Leeds have been the beneficiary of that mistake, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. And he's not just having to manage downwards at Leeds, but of course he's had to manage upwards and deal with a political situation at the club. Hasn't had a big budget. If you look at the squad, it's got some kind of, championship stagers, your Woods, your Rob Greens, all that sort of stuff. But he's managed to forge an identity. He's got some good young players that he's developing. He's putting a style onto. I find him an interesting manager. I mean, his number 2's Pep Clote, isn't it? The Spaniard. And
very good.
He's obviously, him and this guy who didn't work together before Swansea have sort of forged a bit of an understanding and a bond, and it shows us more to Gary Monk than just the traditional British manager. He sort of looks a bit differently at things.
Well, I mean, it looks as if it was out of the frying pan into the fire.
Yeah.
After he left Swansea, where there were political problems behind the scenes as well, which led to him leaving. In many ways, it's worked out better for him because he's probably at the right level to learn and to develop and grow. Yes, it's a madhouse, that place, with the ownership Leeds. But he's developed a sort of management style which perhaps he mightn't have been able to achieve at Swansea. So I think it's worked out really well for him as well.
Mm, yeah, management's a bit of a fashion industry, isn't it? And very fashionable at the moment. The two brothers at Lincoln. Yeah. We're getting a lot of love for them on here. Can they beat Brighton?
I mean, Brighton's such a difficult draw for them because of how well Brighton are doing. If Brighton, though, just think, you know what, it's all about the championship this year and they might change the team, then why not? It's an incredible story, the Cowleys, isn't it? They did amazing things with Braintree, mind-boggling, really. And there's something very sort of fresh about them. And Lincoln, sometimes you saw it with Plymouth and Liverpool, the smaller team can have one good performance, but to actually do it twice, to then take Ipswich back and do it again and see the job through is really impressive.
It does give hope for PE teachers everywhere.
Manchester United, they've got, obviously, a League Cup semi-final, which, let's be honest, they're probably home and hosed.
It's over.
We're still getting a lot of questions about whether they will finish in the top 4. What
no,
do you think?
No, yeah. No, no. Reports of the Manchester United revival are completely overstated. This has been one of the most underwhelming unbeaten runs I've ever seen. Almost as underwhelming as Liverpool's 13 game unbeaten run under Brendan Rodgers. No.
What's wrong with them?
That's the view from the Scouse Liberation Front. What about you?
Yeah, I have been impressed. I wouldn't say I'm overwhelmed by it, but I've been impressed. They look like Manchester United again. I think that they're flawed in personnel. I think Zlatan needs a lot more backup than he gets. And I think, Carrick is still far too important to them. They should have when Fellaini goes in, it's a different team.
Why did it take Mourinho so long to get the Carrick thing?
Well, that's a good question, and he's got himself to blame for not recognising that sooner, and also for taking Carrick out of the team in the last couple of games. But I think they do look like they've got the mentality back. They're playing with width, they're attacking. They're just, I think they're just a...
Phil Jones.
Phil Jones has been great.
I'm not having Phil Jones now. The woolly back Beckenbauer. It's average is everything, great at none.
Well, he looks amazing besides Smalling. Anyway, maybe we don't live in an era of great centre halves.
We don't. That's for sure.
Martin Wall is on. How impressed have we been by Newcastle? You know, Rafa, you both know very well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've done great. They had a little blip, largely to do with Shelvey being suspended. Mm. But, you know, it's the view there was they'll be all right. He'd come back and, start playing well again. I think, Rafa's very ambitious. There's been reports that things are unsettled up in the northeast over transfer policy, and everyone goes, here we go again. I don't believe it's anywhere near as bad as some people are suggesting. I think there's a little bit of frustration that he can't get players of the standard he wants. He's already looking forward to next season in the hope they'll be playing in the Premier League. So
he's just a good coach, Rafa. I mean, he's kept this run going with what Gail and Mitrovic out, and that to me is classic Rafa's, you know. Tony will know as well. He's the detail with which he thinks about things. Mm. He's one of those coaches that finds solutions. He comes up with it in his the preparation that he does. I just think to keep going in those circumstances is impressive. And the way he's just galvanised the whole area, which is what you've got to do as Newcastle manager. You almost have to be president of the Northeast. You've got to manage the whole place.
He loves that sort of thing. He knows how to. It sounds cynical of saying he knows how to work the fans.
He does.
But he does, and it just comes natural to him.
Mm. Yeah, because management is such a strange game. Now, if you look at Sam Allardyce at Crystal Palace, to me, it looks like he hasn't recovered from the England experience.
Yeah, yeah.
They're sleepwalking into real trouble, aren't they?
What was really fascinating is I was at West Ham 10 days ago, and obviously when they played Palace. The benches at West Ham, for anyone who's ever been there, are like 20 yards, more than 20 yards away from the sideline. So, most managers are in the technical area, a long way from the staff. Bilic prowls that sideline. Sam barely left the bench. And I've never seen a team, a Premier League team, that needs a more hands-on organisation and management than Crystal Palace that day. They're all over the place. And one of the hallmarks of Allardyce's managership, which showed at Sunderland, is he come in and he got them organised. He stays on the bench. And afterwards, in the press conference, he didn't have that bounce about him. And I thought, another one. I mean, let's face it, the England job is chewed up and spit out better men than Sam. But I have a feeling that he's been regurgitated too.
And so a few people now beginning to, they've got the dead cat bounce, haven't they? So look at Swansea. Graham Lucas is asking, and I think it's probably a foregone conclusion of an answer, Swansea team of the week?
Yeah, absolutely. What a performance that was. And it wasn't a fluke. It was a good performance. It was backs against the wall at times, even though Paul Clement said it wasn't. But then they played some really good football. They broke very well on Liverpool. He looks like he's signed well. Tom Carroll in particular is an impressive signing. Added a bit of organisation. I think you can see the same happening at Hull, and that leaves a real pressure on the likes of Sunderland and Palace and even Watford, because those two teams that we thought were a bit dead and buried, Hull and Swansea, I've got a chance again.
Get Llorente in the team, cross the ball over to him. Yeah. Bob Bradley left him out of half of his 10 games during his tenure. What was that all about?
I always wonder with Llorente whether he came over here about 5 years too late.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But he'll still score goals.
Yeah. With Crystal Palace, they've got Manchester City in the cup. Now, I think silently, Sam is probably thinking, I'll just get rid of the cup and we'll concentrate on things. How impressed were you with Man City's statement of intent against Spurs?
Very. I thought the high press was absolutely fantastic. Mm. I thought Spurs were a bit dumb, really. I thought Spurs would go long, trying to get behind and get the ball in amongst the City defence. But, instead they persisted in trying to pass it out. I mean, was anyone watching what was happening? But I thought City were fantastic. When I saw the teams, and basically Yaya Toure was a one-man midfield, I thought to myself, this is going to be a blowout. And now it turns out that Guardiola, obviously under a little bit of pressure, mostly from himself, has gone and sat in a room alone for the week and come up with a way to deal with Tottenham, and it worked, and he should. They should have made it.
Suspicion is that game will be an I was there moment.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
What was it 8 minutes?
8 minutes. I was sort of, doing the match report, trying to rein myself in a little bit. It was 8 minutes. But when you see, I think you know it when you see it. I think that kid's special. It's not just he's got a package of skills that are quite obvious, but it was his presence when he came on the pitch. Physical presence as well, he's quite a bit of a unit, but it was more the way that in 8 minutes he was absolutely at the centre of every attack City had. You couldn't take your eyes off him. He just had that kind of I'm here to influence this game sort of thing. And I suspect, you know, one of the big problems City have had, Guardiola talked about it, was not quite turning good spells into dominance. And I think he looks like that special player that should let them do that.
You were very close to Leicester for obvious reasons. Have you been surprised by how badly they've struggled? Quite a few people are asking that.
I have. I think it's probably time to ask questions of the manager, to be honest. And it was refreshing to hear him admit that he was at fault at Southampton. But, you know, he's had £90 million to spend. Mm. Kante didn't go on the 1st of September. He went before the season started. Huge loss, but he hasn't been replaced properly. I think it's almost like you look at the ingredients of Leicester last season. You know, this clearly defined way of playing, this very sort of strong spirit, this chemistry. And it's been unpicked because we've gone back to the Ranieri who tinkers with his team. I interviewed Okazaki last week who said, we're still a little bit confused as to what we're going to do without Kante. Now, this is 5 months into...
That's damning, isn't it?
It is, 5 months into the season. And amazing as Ranieri's achievement was, and I have the fullest respect for it, I think it's only right that you have to look at what's happened this season and say he's just done a rotten job of keeping it going.
Mm. Will they go down?
No, I think they've got enough. You know, mainly because there's people queuing to go down underneath them. they're far worse sides, but it's been a very poor year for them. And you know, you look at I think Slomani, he changed the balance of the attack, and Vardy's had to play a little bit deeper. I thought against Southampton, Vardy was still running all day.
Yeah,
you know, doing where he's
just
and,
not getting the ball the way he's getting
to. And you know, and it's Ranieri's got to be able to find a way of getting the ball to his most prolific striker.
Mm. One of the times I'm really looking forward to is Wickham going to Tottenham. Now, Tottenham are obviously flying. You'd think there'd be one or two kids in the team. Is this the time to actually appreciate what a job that someone like Gareth Ainsworth does in really straitened circumstances in League Two?
Yeah, funnily enough, I remember Rafa Benitez once saying, you know, when you talk about the best managers, I remember him saying, well, maybe the best managers in the bottom division, we just don't know because it depends what they're working with. And Gareth Ainsworth's a great example of that. I mean, we almost take Wickham for granted now as a sort of solid league team, but it's a small club, it's a tiny place. His energy, his sort of personality has kept that club going, produces young players quite often. You know that they're not going to sort of lie down in that tie, that they'll go there and have a go. I think they're lucky to have him, and I'm surprised he hasn't moved, actually.
And it's one of the things, because, I mean, I think chairman chief executives are not imaginative enough to look in the lower divisions and go, okay, you know, this, I mean, someone like Paul Tisdale at Exeter, so, you know, all right, the table doesn't show he's doing a brilliant job, but look how he's managed the club, and look at how he's managed the money. He's actually got them punching way above the weight. Mm. I think it's the same with Ainsworth. I mean, you know, they're in the playoff positions, aren't they? You know, it's there's a fair chance they'll go up, and I think he's done a remarkable job under the conditions.
What about the FA Cup as a whole, Johnny? You know, it has its critics. Mm. You know, there are certainly, you know, Eddie Howe made 11 changes when they were beaten at Millwall. What can be done to emphasise how important this competition is? Maybe, you know, give a Champions League place to the winner?
I understand the thinking behind that, but I don't like it because I do think that you have to reward a league season in terms of getting into Europe. I love the Cup Winners' Cup, though, by the way, as an Aberdeen fan. I wish there was still a Cup Winners' Cup, and that might sort of still add the lustre. It's a really difficult one with the FA Cup. I mean, there's almost been a resurgence of the League Cup because... Mm. The Premier League, I think, is so big now that Saturday, Sunday, you know, weekend Premier League is almost sacrosanct, and fans get annoyed when the Premier League isn't on. Happens with internationals as well. But there's a space for midweek football, and that's and the League Cup's benefited from that. And maybe, and this is, you know, I'm fairly traditionalist on things generally, but maybe the FA Cup has to look at moving to being a midweek competition. I'm afraid, but at the moment, there's just too much sort of negativity when we have a weekend that there's no Premier League football.
Yeah, money dictates everything in football. Why not just give 20 million to the winner?
Well, yeah, I mean, that money, well, 20 million would be reasonable, yeah, that'd be worth playing for. But I think the horse has bolted in reality.
Really?
I don't think we can do much to revive the competition. I think it is where it is. You can move it to midweek, you can make the Premier League teams play away from home when they get lower league opposition. I still think we'll be having this debate over and over again as long as the cup exists, and I hope it's for a long time.
As a final thing, one thing we won't be debating in years to come is what impact Wayne Rooney had on modern football. You know, we were with him last night at the Savoy for the Football Rights Association tribute night. What struck me about him in his speech was, here's someone with an extraordinary talent, but deep down, he's just an ordinary kid.
He is, and the strengths and the flaws of Wayne Rooney probably stem from his ordinariness. And I thought it was a great evening. I thought he came across very genuinely, made a speech from the heart. And I think it's nice that evening because there's always been too much talk about what Wayne Rooney could have become. I think everyone wanted the English Messi or whatever, and it didn't quite happen. But actually, when you look at those records, and last night, you look at, OK, forget what he could have become, what has he become? And he's become an incredible footballer who's really achieved two things that will stand the test of time, and he'll get appreciated more when he's retired.
Oh, definitely. Sven-Göran Eriksson, like, screwed him up, probably, right at the beginning, by saying he was the white Pelé.
Yeah.
He wasn't the white Pelé, he was just a very, very good player. And he's had a brilliant career, and if we could look at Rooney's career from the perspective of where he's achieved, rather than where he hasn't achieved, it's brilliant. And let's face it, what we expect him to have achieved, not many people in the history of English football have.
Mm. What struck me about him also was that there was this. You know, we talk about footballers' role models, which is a load of nonsense, really. But he was a role model to younger players.
Yeah.
Because they're a different breed now, aren't they?
They are, and he talked powerfully about the younger generation and their sort of separation from the media and how the two need to come together. The media probably need to do that. I understand from how he works at England and has always worked at Manchester United that he's rare in that he crosses the barriers in a dressing room. He can relate to 16, 17-year-old kids and he relates to the older pros. I don't think there's many people in any workplace that have got that ability, and Wayne's always had that. I just think, and I talked to him about this afterwards, I just don't think we're going to see the next generation of footballers have that kind of wider influence in a group that he does, because everyone's a bit more individual now. Everyone's less of a team player naturally, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many teams we say are suffering from a lack of leadership?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you see sides who are down and there's a break for an injury and everyone just stands there. Rooney is the sort who go round and saying, come on, get your act together.
Mm. In that context, then, as finally, I can't see him going to China, can you?
Well, no, I hope not. I think it'd be a terrible way for him to end. I think if anything, he could sort of follow in like Steven Gerrard's footsteps and go to America for a while, get a little bit of different experience, and then come back and start looking at coaching if he wants to go that way.
What I do think he'll do is be a manager. I think of that generation, he might be.
Yeah, I think he's more suited manager than Steven to be.
I agree.
China, I'd like to see his career end where it began, Everton. Just a thought. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.